If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Gabagool, a Sopranos podcast. My name's Ben Vanel, I'm one of the hosts. Joining me in a little bit will be Adam Knox, the other host, but I wanted to jump in here with a quick intro to sort of set the ground rules of the show. If you don't know who we are, Adam and I are comedians and podcasters from Melbourne, Australia, and we've been working together for about 6 years now. We were in a sketch group called Chimp Cop. But this entire time, we've been doing a podcast called Filthy Casuals with Tommy Dasilo, and we talk about pop culture there, but mostly video games. And we also did a show that is most similar to what Gabagool is going to be, and that was called Arya Talking to Me, and that was a Game of Thrones review and recap podcast. And the way we approach that is going to be the same way we approach this, which is we're not going to spoil future episodes, we're not going to theorize, we basically watch the entire show week by week and review and recap each episode as if that's the one we've seen up to. And in Adam's case, he hasn't seen The Sopranos, so we will not be spoiling it. We'll be talking about it week by week, and we would love for you to come on that journey with us. Whether you're someone who has seen it or someone who hasn't, we think that the podcast is going to be really accessible to both of you, and we couldn't be more keen to dive into what is potentially the greatest TV show of all time. So with that in mind, we'd love you to get in touch with us. We're at GabagoolPod on Instagram and GabagoolBoys@gmail.com, keeping in mind that we don't want to spoil the show. Episodes will come out every single Monday, so all you have to do is make sure you're up to date in watching the show by the time that pod comes out. I think that's all you need to know, so please enjoy the first episode of Gabagool. Hello, my name's Ben Vanel, and I'm joined by my friend. He's a comedian, he's a podcaster. I'm also those things, to be clear. But I'm joined by my friend who is those things too, Adam Knox. G'day, Adam.
Salut.
But yeah, this is Gabagool. We're gabbing about The Sopranos. And yeah, if you've never heard anything that we've done before, where we live in Melbourne, we're comedians. Currently we're in lockdown, but usually we're watching TV shows and playing video games and talking about them on various recordings.
Yeah, it's a shame we haven't been able to do that during lockdown. Those things just really difficult to access at this current moment. But yeah, I'm looking forward to watching The Sopranos, because my history with the show is that I watched maybe a season and a half years and years ago. So I have seen this episode at some point in the past. But other than that, I'm pretty, like, I know of it through its cultural stuff. So I kind of know Sopranos stuff, but this will be pretty much a first time for me.
Oh, I did not know that. I thought that you had watched it maybe a long time ago and had sort of forgotten it a bit and were coming back to it. But wow, that's okay. So this TV show came out initially in 1999. That was the first season, the pilot and all that shit. On HBO, it is sort of regarded as being the first of the golden age of television shows. It heralded that new era. But I was 12 in 1999. You would have been 10, I think.
I was 10.
Yeah. So obviously I didn't watch it then. I came to this show on DVD probably in my late teens.
You really enjoyed it.
yeah, man, fucking big pussy. He's a looker. I watched this show super late. And never finished it is the thing with me. I watched up until I think the fifth season and never watched the final sort of half season, maybe, because it was like, I think it did that classic, now classic move of splitting the final season in two.
Right.
But yeah, I haven't watched it since then. So I haven't watched it in about 10 years probably.
Yeah. And same for me, probably mid 2000s. I watched the first series. First season, maybe some of the second, but yeah, really I don't know why I dropped off because I was enjoying it.
Yeah, yeah.
And as with this time, the hardest thing about that, like watching that first episode and then not going into the second because that'll be another episode of this, was difficult to do.
Yeah. What sort of, aside from, I guess, yeah, most of your understanding of this show is through cultural osmosis. So what, outside of this episode, because we'll get into the episode specifically in a bit, what was your sort of understanding of the show? What was your feeling about it? What does The Sopranos mean to you?
I knew it was that sort of original one of these sort of what you'd call prestige drama shows now. At the time, I know my dad really liked it and I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose by at the time, I mean in 2001 or whenever Australia would have gotten some of this show. But really all I know is like New York, salami, James Gandolfini's got a big head, big hands.
Yep.
The intro song is really fucking good.
Yes.
Spider is in Goodfellas. Lorraine Bracco is in Goodfellas.
Mm.
And yet Goodfellas is referenced in this episode.
Yeah.
So I know of it just taking place in that world of what's considered to be good mob media.
Right.
And beyond that, like, I get not really a ton. And that it was like the original like twist on the thing was that it's a mobster who is seeing a psychiatrist.
Right. Yep. Yep. I think that's a good viewpoint to have then, because I suspect that a lot of people listening to this podcast will be in the same position. Like, it's such a long time ago now that this show was on TV and super, super relevant, but everyone knows about it. Everyone, you know, this appears in so many best of all time lists and things like that. But at this point, 20 years removed is more of a cultural artifact than a show we all still like watch and talk about. I've watched most of it. I loved it at the time. I believe the reason I never finished it is because I couldn't afford the DVDs anymore. I just ran out of money. Look, let's just get stuck right into it. The first episode's really, really interesting. So let's start talking about an episode called either Pilot or The Sopranos.
Yeah, is it? I guess it's called The Sopranos.
Yeah.
It seems to be the official name, but I've written down Pilot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put The Sopranos in brackets for my own record keeping. I've got a little book here.
Yeah.
It's going to be my notebook
that
I'll keep all my notes in, and then I'll sell it for charity after the enormous success of this podcast.
Sure. Well, then it's just going to be rating how hot you find all of the mobsters, right?
That's all I've written so far. Great. So far, Christopher, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, number two.
Okay.
The guy who does that thing where his hands are always touching each other.
Paulie? You can't remember Paulie's name?
Do we know that he's Paulie yet, though?
Because
the thing. I don't know anyone's names. I don't know the name of him or the strip club owner. Mm-hmm. I know Big Pussy because Little Pussy is also mentioned.
Yes.
I know Uncle June or mm-hmm. Uncle Junior.
Yep.
And the mother. And
she
Edie
has
Falco.
A name. Yeah. Oh, the mother as in Tony's mother. Sorry, yes.
Tony's mum.
Yep.
As well. And I know Edie Falco's real life name.
Right. Let's also set the sort of standard for how we do these episodes. People familiar with Aria Talking to Me will know that we essentially review these without necessarily all the context of the following episodes. Obviously, for you, that'll be the case just because it has to be. But we're not going to be looking down the line at story beats that are to come and sort of looking at the foreshadowing. We're not going to be talking about stuff outside of the show culturally, really, in terms of like the reception or stuff like that. We like to look at this as a show, as a piece of media, the writing, the acting, and the story within the episodes.
It's a water cooler where it played this week and we're talking about it and people keep coming up to the water cooler and being like, they've been talking for like an hour. What the fuck has got, how can they possibly have that much of this show? Are they looking at a recap?
But it's kind of funny to listen to. So I guess I'll just sort of loiter near the water cooler for a little bit.
Sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it seems like they're just sort of like, oh, yeah, season 3, episode 4, not much to say.
The start of the conversation seemed like they hadn't been talking about it at all for maybe years. I'd never had a conversation before.
Who gets around a water cooler and starts setting up the terms? Why'd he promise not to do an accent? We're at work. He shouldn't be doing accents. That's not appropriate here.
But yeah, we're just going to sort of run through this episode beat by beat and react to it and talk about it. So yeah, this episode starts with Tony in the psychiatrist's office. He's just in the waiting room.
He's got the first shot of him is him between two legs of a statue of a naked woman.
That's right.
Which I ain't no cinematographer. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I ain't no director. And this is a separate voice.
This is man who isn't a cinematographer.
Yeah. This is my famous character, guy who lists jobs he doesn't do. Look, I ain't a butcher. Okay. But it seems to me that they are saying he is currently imprisoned or sort of stuck underneath the trap of the women in his life.
Interesting. Interesting.
They are surrounding him, and his problems seem to stem from women at this point.
Right. Which I think is true of one woman, maybe. Maybe for him, his perception is that it's multiple.
Because he feels it's his mother.
Mm-hmm.
It's this psychiatrist.
That's
pretty
true.
Soon.
That's true.
I think that he is very... He's clearly nervous about doing this. He wouldn't say that he's nervous, but he doesn't want to do it. We're talking about, you know, these tough guys in a time when, like the way they talk about Prozac and stuff in this episode, we're still in the point where going to see a shrink is like, hey, what are you, in the loony bin? You know, like...
And as he underlines later on, like, it's not just that. It's the fact that he's he's involved in the mafia, an organization built on killing people who don't seem like they're strong enough to be in this organization.
Exactly. He says to his wife later on, like, if the wrong person finds out I'm doing this, I get a steel jacketed Prozac right to the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking love that. The writing in this whole episode, and I'm assuming the show going forward, boy, oh boy, it's good. And you just compare it to what was happening at the time on TV, and you can really see how this show stood out and kind of kicked off a way of thinking about TV that changed it.
Absolutely. And I think it's worth noting that the writing in this episode is probably its weakest, and that makes sense. It's the pilot, you know, they're figuring stuff out. But I think there are a few lines in there that stand out because they call attention to themselves. They're a bit written.
Yes.
And I also felt that about James Gandolfini's performance. He's obviously Tony Soprano. He's the lead. He's one of the greatest actors of all time. But I think there are still moments in this pilot where he seems more James Gandolfini than Tony Soprano. There was a line I wrote down that was sort of emblematic of it to me. I think he's talking about his mother, maybe, saying, like, she told my girl cousins I'd never be a varsity athlete. And frankly, that was a tremendous blow to my self-esteem. That's in the voiceover, but that is not...
Right.
That doesn't really ring true as a line that Tony Soprano would say. It's a little bit more of Gandolfini than Tony Soprano, but it's a good line.
I think it's
one of those ones where it hasn't quite meshed together into being this cohesive thing yet.
No, I think he's maybe sort of playing along with the idea of doing the psychiatry stuff. Like there's a few times when he kind of like tries to move it forward quicker. He's like, oh, my mother, that's a connection with the Ducks, my family.
Right.
Okay, good, we're done here. All right, sure. Let's get out of here. But I also think that I'm giving it a bit of credit that like there are a few clunky lines at certain points. There are ones that I really like that like him saying that look, I did a semester and a half at university.
Right.
Like that sort of stuff where...
That's very revelatory of his personality. Like that says a lot about him, right?
Totally. Like there's plenty of stuff like that, of that quick character building that they do with these characters who they put no effort into introducing in anything other than a naturalistic way. They just, they all show up. Nobody's walking up and going like, oh, hey, it's Big Pussy, the other guy who works with us.
Yes.
Hey, look at that. It's the guy who owns a strip club and he's sort of in with us, but he's like sort of maybe on the side a little bit. Hey, it's my friend from school. Yeah, like maybe they do actually with the guy. But
and I think they do a little bit with Christopher, but they do it in a very smart way, which frames the entire episode of Tony genuinely talking about his life to this therapist. Right. So it starts with him meeting the therapist, being very resistant to it, but using that as a device to introduce us to his family.
Because he's collapsed is the reason he's gone there, and he's going back and telling her the story of that day and like what happened for what she later is like, you had a panic attack, dude. So yeah, the family's kind of all milling around in the morning, right?
Yep. Yes.
Having a bit of a family morning.
Yeah, Meadow's there with her friend, I feel like, is there, because they're sort of talking about going to Aspen, and Carmella is like, as long as you do your fucking homework, and Meadow's like, I'm going to do my homework.
She's a real fucking teenager. She is
absolutely.
Like, oh man, I wanted like I remember watching this at the start and sort of being like, okay, I can kind of get where she's coming from when I was a teenager.
Right.
Now I'm like, how dare you talk to your fucking parents that way?
I know. That's exactly how I felt too. Like, just do your homework. You know, like
your mum's reaching out to you here. She wants to go to the shops.
Yeah.
That's not much. Give her a fucking day. You'll regret it later on when she has to become a nurse. To pay your bills. Change her name to Jackie.
I know. And nurses at this point in time, oh boy, on the front lines. It's a tough, it's a very
tough
gig.
You should be applauding your mother.
Yeah. But I also felt that. I felt the sort of the genuine pain of Carmella and Tony to a lesser extent of like this, my daughter is retreating from me, is pulling away despite me trying to have given her everything I could possibly give her.
Yeah, because we should mention as well, the intro is really cool. It just starts with that intro and that song, and it just sets it up so well. I wrote down, it's almost like the city is a character. And also the binge can fuck off the skip intro button after a while.
Oh,
it's there for the entire intro.
I know. I went to just pause it. I went to cue it up and then pause it to like get a cuppa, and it just skipped the intro. I was like, I want to watch that. It's a great intro.
I'm going to watch it every week, baby.
Yeah, it's a great song. Yeah,
they're like having a chat, and like Tony's voiceover with this morning talking to Dr. Melfi, who's the psychiatrist, he's kind of saying like, hey, I got these problems, blah, 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 blah. Like, it's money, it's family, I'm stressed about this. And they're really hammering home the point of how Tony's problems here are representative of America as a whole. Like, even if you can't relate to this gangster, maybe you can relate to, you know, he picks up a newspaper and it's got like, Clinton does some bullshit or whatever on the front.
It's Clinton to scale back Medicare, which ironically is being threatened in Australia now. But yeah, it's that. It is the sort of disintegration of what Tony sees as traditional family values.
Right.
You know, hard work and being a strong, silent, masculine type.
He's talking about Gary Cooper later on. Right. He's like, well, what the fuck happened to Gary Cooper? You know, and it's like, well, he's still acting in the 90s, I think. I can't remember. He was in Cape Fear.
But more to the point, it is the stuff that Tony isn't saying, right? It's like, you know, the fragmentation of community. It's the stuff he can't articulate, like industry being broken down and taken offshore, and things that are arguably good or bad, but certainly changing the dynamic of modern life.
Kids don't want to stick to the one job these days. Like, he talks about how kids these days, they're all taking the plea bargains because they can't do the time in prison. And it's like, nobody wants to have a long career with the one company now. They want to move around. Which I think was still a thing back then. Melfi specifically says, well, I think many Americans feel that way, which is one of the kind of clunky bits of... But yeah, so he's doing that. He's getting the paper. He's looking at the ducks in his pond. In his pool, I mean. Mm-hmm. The ducks would think of it as a pond. They wouldn't know what a pool is.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Then he's reading a book about birds. This guy loves birds.
He has become particularly attached to the concept of birds, and at this point in time it just seems like a dad thing. It struck 100%. Me how ridiculously relatable this has become as I've gotten older and my dad has gotten older. Like, okay, you saw a bridge, that's cool, and like dad's just been like sending me photos of bridges, like, how cool is this bridge? Like,
do you know how hard they have to work to build a bridge?
Right.
Yeah. They get really into like, damn, look at the shit that these birds are doing. They're learning how to fly. There's little ducklings. This is great. I'm going to walk in the pool with my robe on.
Yep.
And he's telling Melfi about how his job is as a waste management consultant.
Yes.
She very quickly picks up what the fuck he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. She drops the, like, I understand. I have to. There's doctor-patient confidentiality. However, if a crime may be committed at, you know, in the near future due to things that I hear here, I got to tell the authorities. She qualifies it, though, right? She's like, technically, I should call the authorities.
She's telling him what she needs to, but also being like, look, don't worry about me, but maybe just do a little bit of the bullshit, like, glaze over it, that we both know what you're talking about. But, and he does that where he's talking about, okay, I ran into this guy who owed me money and we had coffee, and then it cuts to him dropping his coffee because they are getting out of the car to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah. Yeah, Tony chases him down and runs him over. This is a guy who we find out works for an insurance company.
Yeah.
What's his name? It is Mahaffey.
That's right.
Yeah. So Mahaffey he's a compulsive gambler, and obviously, yeah, he's in debt to the mob, to Tony, who runs the North Jersey Mafia. And yeah, they break his leg with a car, beat the shit out of him, and tell him, you know, give us our money.
Yeah, because him and Christopher are driving there, and Christopher's like, oh, I don't know, I felt sick this, but, and like Tony obviously thinks, new generation, they're fucking lazy, blah blah blah.
Yep.
And he's worried about his car having a dent in it when this guy's like got his leg broken and screaming on the ground.
Yeah.
This guy Mahaffey. Did you know Mahaffey? This is a little bit of trivia about him.
Yeah.
He was named in the writing process. He was named because Jerry Lewis came into the room. And they were trying to think of the name, and Jerry Lewis went, Mahaffey! And that's how he got named. A lot of people don't know.
Wow, I don't think I've ever seen that written down anywhere. So,
yeah, that's
interesting.
The other character, Hyvan Glavy, who comes up later. Nice lady! As well.
Yeah, the. So we go back to
the
therapist's
that.
Office, and we have the Nutty Professor there talking to Tony, and she says, "No, so we've named a couple of characters here. Dr. Melfi is the therapist, played by Lorraine Bracco from Goodfellas. You mentioned that at the start. We've got Carmela, played by Edie Falco. Christopher Moltisanti is Tony's nephew, and he's played by Michael Imperioli. Christopher is a great character.
Yeah, I like him already. He's like the young guy. Obviously, Tony's like protege sort of thing. You get a scene with them later at a barbecue where I guess we'll get to that when we get to that. But
because Tony's own son is way too young to be involved yet. Anthony Jr. is actually, he's another character who's appeared by this point in the episode. I think the funniest character in this episode. He has some really good lines, just some dumb childish reactions.
Yeah, it's his 13th birthday today. So they're going to have a birthday dinner for him later that night in the sort of flashback that we're in.
Yes.
So, yeah, Tony and Chris go and beat up this dude. Then they're sitting at, like, this deli later on, which is clearly where they run their operations out of. He's telling Melfi, like, I'm at the office or whatever.
Right.
They ask for a plate of gabagool, or the strip club guy comes over and he's like, hey, my wife sends me down here to get the gabagool.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to make note of every time they say the word gabagool in this show.
All right. I suspect it might be fewer than we think, but we'll see. We'll see how many times it is.
We're up to one.
We're one for one
per episode at this point.
I think they might have said it twice during that conversation.
I'm just going to count the number of episodes Gabagool appears
in. Okay. All right. Done. Good.
So
good
Gabagool metric. Count currently one episode.
All right. So yeah, what else is happening around this time? They're actually talking about a waste management deal. Like, I forget. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a front, but they still do business in this industry.
But it's all the way the mob kind of does business, where it's like, you know, you do your business, but pay us a cut on the side. So we technically run this, but it just means that we're in the area. And if you're doing business in this area, we're going to, you know, do something for you. And they've got trucks and they've got unions and they've got all that stuff. But there's like a Czechoslovakian outfit who are trying to muscle in and trying to undercut them. They're talking about that, and they're talking about what's his name with the strip club is like, hey, I heard a rumor your uncle is going to whack a guy in your friend's restaurant.
Yes. So the strip club, the Butter Bing, great name. The owner, I believe, is Silvio Dante, played by, what's his name? Stevie Van Zandt. Great name.
Okay.
Both character and real name, great names.
Yeah, I don't mind them.
But yeah, he owns the Butterbean.
I've got
you're
no
right.
objections.
Okay. He mentions that Uncle Junior, who is from the previous generation, he's Tony's father's brother.
So Tony's dad used to run things before he died. Now
yes.
Tony runs things. And you find out later on that Uncle Junior's always had a chip on his shoulder about that, because first it was his older brother who was running it, then his younger brother, which is Tony's dad, and he just kind of got skipped over, and now it's Tony, right. And he's like, well, fuck you, I'm still here.
Mm.
Yeah.
And he's going to whack Little Pussy, who I don't know if we see Little Pussy.
You get a little clip of him on the news later on.
Oh, right. I don't remember what his involvement is in the whole situation, other than being a victim of Uncle Junior's whacking.
Yeah, I can't remember what it is that there's... I don't know why there's beef, deli meat between them, but there's something going on. Yeah, Big Pussy... I mean, Uncle Junior, he's going to kill him in this restaurant because Big Little Pussy feels safe there.
Yes.
And so it's Tony's childhood friend's restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. Artie Bucco. So many good
Artie
names
Bucco.
In this show. Artie Bucco. Yeah. Who's just a normal guy. He's friends with Tony from back in the day. He's a restaurant owner. He's
legitimate businessman.
Absolutely. And a lovely guy. He has such a genuine exuberant presence in this episode.
Yeah.
And very naive.
Absolutely, because his wife knows Tony up and down. She's
like,
this dude, don't take cruise tickets from this dude, because Tony doesn't like that his restaurant's going to get affected by this killing, by this guy getting wet there, which is a term for getting killed that I hadn't, that I don't remember hearing, and it's good.
It's very good. But So Tony, just as a friend, he doesn't want this business to be affected by someone being murdered there, because as they all rightly think, I think Christopher puts a point on it later on, people might stop coming to your restaurant if someone gets shot in the head there.
Exactly. So he sort of starts trying to figure out how he can get Artie Bucco out of this situation. He asks Uncle Junior not to do it there.
Yep.
Uncle Junior's like, fuck you, I do what I want.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that sort of path is leading to a dead end.
No, negotiations break down very quickly in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So while he's sort of doing all this stuff, he's got lots of things going on. He goes around to his mother's house as well to deliver a stereo to her that he thinks she might want to see.
Yes, that's right. This is the first time we meet Olivia Soprano. She's living at home still. Her partner, Tony's dad, has died, and she kind of seems, I don't know, not out of it, but a little not doing great living by herself.
Classic shut-in. Sort of thing where she's I won't answer the phone at night, and very, very...
She's locks the... the door's locked. She won't let Tony in initially. She makes sure that he locks it after he comes in. Yeah, a little bit paranoid.
Anxious, paranoid, a little... Does seem a little spacey or something. Not quite to the point of that you got to worry too much, but she's...
You always got to worry a little bit when someone seems spacey. I always say that, you know? That house of cards could collapse quickly.
So she was the one who married into the family.
Right.
So she's Tony's mum and, the sort of sister-in-law of Uncle Junior and that sort of stuff. And she has clearly been impacted by her husband's death.
Yes.
Tony later on is at the time she didn't fucking like him, and now that he's dead, he's a saint. What the fuck's going on?
Mm-hmm.
But she, whether, sincerely or not, is taking things hard. She doesn't want to be put in a nursing home.
Yeah.
There's something about her where she's just straight away, the actor really fucking good, because she's that pretend weak, manipulative type of mother that just I know exactly this persona that they're portraying here.
Right. Like you said before, they use some lines to develop character really quickly, and this one scene, it's a great scene, and you get everything you need to know from her. She, Tony's you love music, you listen to music all the time, I brought you this CD player, everything's on CD now, and she's like, no, I don't want it, I don't have a good reason, but, I'm not going to accept it because I want to keep you on the back foot and always fighting for my love. I'm not going to give you an easy, way through this situation.
she shows up to their family barbecue at the end of the episode, and first thing she's like, "You're using mesquite on there? It makes the sausages taste weird. Fucking what's wrong with you?" Yeah. Like, just a real, and is the main problem that he actually sort of identifies and speaks to Melfi about.
Right.
She's the first thing where he's like, "Yeah, this is a big deal for me."
Right, right, right. Because, yeah, the first time he collapses, I think it's just, it's at the barbecue, but it's before, she's not there or anything, right? It's just...
No, there's two barbecues because they try to have the first one, and it's the kid's birthday, and pretty early on in it, the kid says something about like, "So what, we're not going to have any fucking..." And then...
Some type of
food.
Ziti. Like,
fucking Ziti.
Meadow comes out and is like, "Mom's not coming, or Grandma's not coming." And yeah, Anthony's response is, "So what, no fucking Ziti?"
Yeah. But this kid's funny.
He's very funny.
Tony's so, like, cooking away.
He's just like twirling the snags, right? Just rotating the sausages for our American listeners.
That common Australian phrase, twirling the snags. he's there, and then he's looking at the ducks, and the ducks start to fly away. They've been trying to learn how to fly, and they manage to do it.
Right.
And it sends him into a spiral, and as he grabs his heart and he falls over, he leaves the like jar of, or the tin of whatever it's called, fire. The
lighter fluid, right? Isn't it?
Lighter fluid.
Yeah.
Leaves that on the barbecue and it explodes.
Yep.
And all the family rush over to Tony, except for Silvio, who, for some reason, it is so funny the way he does it.
I agree.
He walks over with the most concerned face and then starts fire extinguishing the barbecue. Just ignores there's just something really funny about the way that happened.
He really gives it a honk too. It's just like absolute overkill. Huge, like, just fills the screen with liquid nitrogen. It's, agreed. Very funny.
I can't explain to you why, but fuck, it's good.
So he faints. That's his first incident. That's the reason he's in therapy, right? Because the fainting later on is after he's already spoken to Melfi a couple of times.
Right, because he faints again.
Yeah,
is the thing. He talks to Melfi and he's like, "You know what? Fuck this." Something triggers him to leave the session there. I can't remember what it is. She talks about that he's depressed.
Yes.
And it's the bringing up depression. He's not into it. He gets up and leaves.
And successfully finding the pressure point of the ducks, being like, "So tell me more about the ducks." And he's like, "No, fuck it." You know, and he feels vulnerable. That's the reason he storms out. She gets to the crux of the issue, or at least one of the issues, and he can't take it. Yeah.
And so he's off and they're looking at this nursing home that he says isn't a nursing home for his mother.
Mm-hmm.
The family's kind of walking around there. The son is like, "This place is actually pretty good."
Mm.
You should think about this, Grandma. It's like, what the fuck do you know?
They got classical book readings, free food.
Yeah.
There are
lots of old ladies here. You're an old lady. I don't know. Yeah. Again, kind of funny. But she sees that it's like there's a hospital ward part of it.
Yeah,
and she's like, "Nah, fuck this. I don't want to go here. Fuck you. Take me home." And it sets Tony off again. He faints again. And that triggers the second visit to Melfi.
Yeah. It's interesting that, I guess we'll get to it later, but the ducks being the first trigger, they're sort of, it's an opposite emotional issue for him. Because this second one, the mum, is like a member of his family being so overbearing that he can't handle it. And then the ducks is the opposite. But I guess, we'll come back to that when he has that revelation too.
Because it's multiple things at once, right? It's like he wants to fly away from elements of his family.
Right.
He's worried about what he's doing will mean that his family disappears. The mob is a family and he's worried he can't keep control of that. It's everything in his life is represented by these ducks.
Absolutely. And like we talked about some of the lines being a bit on the nose, but... figuring out this concept and having it mean so many different things in a way that's like very understandable is like, it's pretty genius for the first episode of a show.
Exactly. It's a real simple metaphor that does it all. Mm. And I think that's as good as enjoying a nice sunset. That's a simile, but
yeah.
Hey, a simile, a simile you, you know, simmer down. How about that? I can do writing.
This is, this is on par with the first episode of The Sopranos. But
so she gives him Prozac this time.
Exactly. He goes back because of that second fainting spell. He up until this point, he's like, maybe I need this, but I can't do it. He gives in at this point. He's like, if I can't, I can't keep collapsing. That's worse than someone finding out I need to go to therapy. You know, he's
exactly.
It's gonna have the same result.
People know about the first one. He's right. had to have an MRI that him and his wife are sort of fighting during, and she's like, you're cheating on me all the time. She's just accepted that. She says these things about his mistresses.
Well, and that's, I think, the most interesting thing about this show is that it explores, or it makes mob tropes into real people with complex issues and depth.
Right.
And Carmela is the mob wife. You know, she is Lorraine Bracco's character in Goodfellas. She's...
Yeah.
Annoyed and at her wit's end because her husband is in the mafia and fucks around on her all the time and is a liar. And she basically lays that out in that scene, but, you know, this is a very long show. She's not just that, and we get to see more depth to her character too.
Yeah, because she's got, like, a priest who Tony doesn't like who's kind of coming around to the house, and she's like, whatever, that spiritual shit, that's nothing like your girls. Mm. And, like, you see... Here, I think, because he takes some of the Prozac on a golf course. He's talking about what to do with this, with all of the situations going on. I can't remember what they're talking about, but they're talking about some shit.
Yeah.
Maybe that's when he talks to Junior or something. I can't remember.
Yeah, maybe. But they talk about the check situation. They talk about, Little Pussy. Maybe that is when they talked about talked to Uncle Junior, actually, yeah.
Because there's a couple other guys who show up later when they're at the strip club, right? They're not there yet.
Let's get back to that gabagool.
But so he gets the Prozac and stops sort of attending their things. You see her go out and she's like, Mr. Soprano, and he's not there. But he's taking the Prozac and he sees her at a restaurant.
Yes.
He's there with his mistress and she's there with someone whose name is Niels.
Yeah.
Like a plural version of Neil. And I absolutely didn't understand or have ever heard that name before.
I think I've heard it once, and it's like a Scandinavian person who was called like N-I-L-S.
Right.
So I didn't, I don't know. I think it's just a guy called Niels with an S on the end, maybe.
That makes more sense.
But this guy's just like a classic New York, New Jersey rich guy.
Yeah, and they see each other. I think this might be slightly out of order, but like he's like, hey, those decorating tips really worked for me, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, okay, get out of here. Clearly doesn't want to talk to him. She's like, can we go eat somewhere else? But then Tony's like, give her a table, and they were waiting for a long time, and the guy's like, holy shit!
Yeah.
That's crazy that he did that. I love it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that happens maybe a bit later, because I wrote Niels down way later, but in the meantime...
Well, yeah, because Christopher has like tried to take the initiative and solve the check problem. The problem, yeah, like you said before, they're trying to muscle in on just doing actual waste management. They're trying to strike a deal for the area that is undercutting Tony and his guys. And so Christopher is like, I'll figure this out, you know, I'll handle it. And his way of handling it is setting up a fake drug deal with one of the guys, one of the sons, I guess.
Yeah.
Emil, who Chris keeps mispronouncing as...
Email. Yeah, which is really good.
Which is good stuff.
Man, I love all the 90s shit, because like when the wife and the priest... they're like watching laser discs together as well at one point.
Yes, yes.
And I just like my notes aren't that helpful because I wrote down laser discs are sick and Niels and like I kind of remember what scenes they're from, but I need to change this up for future episodes.
But yeah, I that's a fun little scene with the priest. It sort of feels a bit like a non sequitur, but we do get an insight into Carmela's personal life and her emotional state.
And that's when Meadow is like. She snuck out and
that's right.
Little Tony Jr.'s like locked the window on it. So she gets banned from doing this stuff and that sends her into her spiral later on. But like the Laserdisc thing, they bring up Goodfellas.
Yes.
I can't get over that.
Yes,
do you reckon Dr. Melfi gets people telling her like, hey, you look like Lorraine Bracco?
Yeah. She would have to. This is an Ocean's 12 situation. This is a Julia Roberts playing, right? Yeah.
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 It is.
It's funny. Well, it is good, though. I like that little bit of... Because they mention... She says specifically Godfather 2 at the start.
Yeah.
And the priest is like, oh, Tony prefers 2. And she's like, yeah, you know, he likes the bit where Vito goes back to Sicily. It's like, oh, you know, Tony is a step separated from this, you know, picture version of the Mafia, but he has this nostalgia through this medium for Italy and for Sicily, for this idea of the family and the Mafia and the whole thing.
Real nostalgic classical guy. Everything he's doing is like, why isn't it like the old days?
Yeah.
At the start, he's like, I feel like like it's obviously best to get into something on the ground floor, and I definitely didn't do that. But now I'm starting to think I'm here at the very end.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Meadow gets caught, which leads to later on, like, the sort of disagreement between her and her mother, where she's really rude to her while she's loading up a JPEG over the course of a 4-minute scene on her old computer.
Yep.
And so, yeah, the family unit isn't working together. They got fucking teenagers. Right. It's only going to get worse for a bit.
Yep.
And so the mother and the daughter aren't really getting along. Like, Meadow has a netball game that, what's her name?
Carmella?
Carmella isn't at because she doesn't think Meadow will want her there, and they're having sort of a disagreement and not seeing each eye to eye. And Tony is there, but he's so distracted as they walk out. Because he's got this new Prozac-y way of looking at life. He thinks he's cured.
Well, I think we skipped over the thing that aligned with the Prozac thing is he figured out this situation with this insurance guy who owes the money. He posed this really good, very clever solution. He's meeting with this guy, Hesh, who was in a sort of... He's kind of like the Robert Duvall character in The Godfather. He's a non-Italian, like, business associate, a right-hand man of the family. He worked for Tony's dad. And he is the one who I believe is owed money by this insurance guy. And
so they're having $250,000, I think.
Yeah, yeah. They're having a sit down in Silvio's strip club. And I believe it's then Tony just comes up with the idea of, like, we set up a bunch of fake clients, businesses, whatever, and make false insurance claims through your company through this insurance company.
I just paid $3,000 or whatever for that MRI. It was easy as piss. Like, you just write these, they'll look legitimate. We give him the option to either pay us the money now, which he doesn't have, do this for us, which he'll have to, because the other option is we murder him.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah, a real Sophie's choice.
They have that discussion at the at that strip club where, again, another thing for TV at the time, you're seeing boobs in this show.
Yeah, true.
This is the start of HBO's Get a Loaded, We're Allowed to Show Tits. Like, you see them there, and with, not that I'm going to record these as often as I record Gabagool, but I wanted to bring this scene up because you see with, like, Tony's mistress, they're, like, hanging out on a boat, and he's like, don't touch that hat, that's JFK's hat. Like, fuck do you mean you own JFK's hat?
Yeah. What's the conspiracy theory that the Mafia killed JFK?
Maybe
they took the hat when they killed him. Maybe that's what it is.
Why was he wearing a little... I don't remember wearing a sailor hat in the Zapruder film.
I know you said you won't record the tits as you will be recording the Gabagools, but whenever I see tits, I say Gabagool! So for me, it's going to be sort of one for one. But yeah, so there was that scene, and Tony is back on top of the world. He feels like he has solved things.
Because he's got an idea for Artie Bucco too. He's going to give him cruise tickets, get him out of the place so that the restaurant has to shut down in the period of time that Uncle Junior was going to kill him. But Artie Bucco's wife is like, don't take these fucking tickets.
Yeah.
Where do you think Tony Soprano got this from? Well, he tell you? He's like, oh, a dentist gave them to me. A dentist? You think a dentist gave him a 2-week cruise? You're a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Our kids are doing their homework at the restaurant.
Oh, yeah. That was a bit weird. But I guess, you know, it's their restaurant. They live there half the time. Yeah. He says, but Tony, he's a labor leader. He just thinks of him as, like, you know, a union head, which was the whole thing. That was the issue, that the corruption of the union and the mob, you know, became intertwined. But I just loved him. He's a labor leader.
Yeah, he really is sucking on the Tony Soprano bottle, getting everything that Tony wants to feed him.
Which doesn't
end up happening.
It's worth pointing out that he is clearly entranced by Tony's position in the world. The romance of the Mafia, of crime. And I feel like that's bubbling under the surface with Dr. Melfi. You know, the way she plays into, like, you know, you can't tell me certain things, but I still want to hear you talk about them, and betrays a little bit of that as well.
she like is with this fucking loser Niels, and then Tony Soprano fixes the problems that they were having at the restaurant like that.
Right.
Like, she, you can see that there is something she does find appealing about this.
Totally, yes. When he doesn't show up that time, she's clearly disappointed, not just as a doctor, as someone who wants to hear about this stuff.
Right. So he's like, there was another bit that we skipped over as well. So yeah, they intimidate Hassafras, what was his name? Mahaffey.
Mahaffey, yes.
And make him agree to it, like, by threatening to throw him off a bridge, basically.
Yeah.
And then, but also, so the scene we kind of skipped over was Chris bringing that guy from the Czech crime group into the deli and shooting him there.
Right.
There's like photos up on the wall of like Al Capone and Dean Martin and all these people that I think Chris...
Jimmy Cagney, I think, as well, maybe is one of them. Yeah.
I kind of liked, again, it's like... Like the statue, it's kind of, maybe you could say it's on the nose, but he's showing all these black and white, unrealistic photos of people that Chris thinks he is or aspires to be, and then these big, three-dimensional, real-life pig heads that are just like, oh, maybe that's kind of what you're actually...
Right. And I think the end point is a little on the nose, but it's set up, you know, like they walk into a deli and it's an Italian deli. The wall is covered with black and white photos of famous Italians. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
Yeah, but I agree. I like that. It was a little bit more directed, right? It was a little... It's not just like normal TV show, you know, framing and editing and stuff. It's a bit more purposeful. Yeah.
Totally. Like with the statue, I like those things. They're a little maybe like obvious, but everything's always going to be obvious if you're looking for it to do a show about it later on. Like, we're specifically looking for this stuff. So, that happens. And then they like are disposing of the body... And Big Pussy, who's like a tough guy in the family, he's like, this is a stupid way of doing it. We shouldn't put it here where they're going to find it and piss them off. How about we just dispose of the body? And then they're thinking, where's the kid? Maybe we'll get him back if we play ball.
Right.
So this guy's clearly been around for a while.
It's,
he knows how to
do
this. And they're so cold about this murder.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a few... henchmen, I guess what you would call them.
Yeah.
Paulie, who isn't, I don't believe his name, Silvio, and then Big Pussy, who come across as sort of bumbling, silly uncles for the most part of this episode. But yeah, you're right. It's clearly a guy who's murdered a lot of people, knows how to play this game, and comes across as an experienced, like, smarter guy in the situation. It's like, this is the show, this is the world, but this is the kind of mentor that Christopher has.
And it shows those two halves of each of these people where they're, you know, hey, they're all friends, they're hanging around, they're having an espresso, they're talking.
Right.
And then later on, they're throwing this body away and it's just as easy for them.
Right.
To do
that.
Yep. Like, Silvio gets enlisted by Tony to blow up Artie Bucco's restaurant. And so you've seen him be like the strip club manager. He's like, please, the drinks are in the house. Hey, look at me. I'm walking around. I'm in my slick suit. What am I?
Sure. He's hanging around with the kid. Game. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's a fan. Like, they're all family men, but, this is the fourth solution to the other solution to the Artie Bucco problem. He gives back the tickets cause his wife tells him not to take them. And so, we get another moment of Tony proving the reason why he is, you know, the head of a criminal enterprise. He's a smart guy.
He's a smart guy and he'll do what it takes.
Right.
You know, so he's not afraid to fucking blow up a building if it'll be an end to his means to his end.
Totally. And it's like, sure, like the restaurant is insured. They'll be able to rebuild. This is not all bad for Artie, but it's bad.
Yeah.
And it does totally benefit Tony, which is interesting because, like we said earlier, this is motivated by Tony wanting to protect Artie, you know, his friend. He wants to protect him from having a guy shot in the head in his restaurant. And it gets to the point through a series of, you know, human, just like genuine human issues, people pushing back and having problems that can't be solved by shooting someone in the head. It ends up at this point.
And it almost seems like, because to do something that harsh when you're trying to help a friend, it comes across to me as the type of person who, like, they say they want to protect their family, but You know when you hear someone say that and you, it comes across like you want to protect your assets.
Right.
You see these people as your a mark on your pride if something happens to them. So
yes,
it feels that way more than looking out for a friend. Because they're talking about it at the barbecue and he's crying about it and they're like, hey, look, whatever, you know, it's better than what could have happened. He's like, what do you mean what could have happened? And Christopher's like, I don't know, maybe everyone stops coming to your restaurant because something happens there.
Yeah.
Anyway, see you later. And
that's so weird.
Yeah.
It's a really good performance, this Christopher, you know, the entire character. It's a guy who's like, he wants to say that thing because he wants everyone to know that he knows, you know, what is going to happen. He wants to be right. He wants people to know. And then he's like, ah, fucking, I shouldn't have said that. And he knows that he shouldn't have said that as well. And
Because he's like a bit of a hothead. He's like, before he kills that guy, he's like punching the air to some rock song. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But he's definitely, but then he, like, Tony comes over to him. He's like, what the fuck's your problem? And he's like, I would have liked to thank you for having dealt with that situation. I know I maybe didn't do it the way you wanted, but I dealt with it and I wanted a little thank you. And Tony's like, you know what? Yeah, you're right. I'm wrong here.
Yeah, it's interesting because that moment of clarity, you know, that moment of growth for Tony is obvious. Mm. Like, you know, like and you see it coming through the whole episode. It makes sense that by that point he's like, yeah, I'm gonna give Christopher the credit he deserves. While at the same time, I think, you touched on it, and I hadn't really thought about it in that way until just now. The Artie Bucco stuff is not about Tony being nice to his friend. It's about Tony asserting dominance over his uncle who keeps trying to be the top dog.
Exactly.
And that's all it is.
And it's explicitly that for his uncle. Like, his uncle is just saying that it's that, but Tony's got this sort of fake, lying, manipulative way of pretending as though he's being... Artie Bucco's in his corner, like being his savior. But, you know, it's manipulative, and in the same way that you see his mother being during this episode. Because, like, the only time he says to his wife, that they have dinner, him and his wife, at the same place where he went with his mistress, and the guy does a big show being like, Tony, we haven't seen you in forever. Hello.
Yes.
And so he admits to her, like, I've been going to see a therapist. I'm on this Prozac stuff. You know, don't fucking tell anyone. You're the only person in the world I'm honest with. And she's like, that's ridiculous. No, you aren't.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to hear that you're on the Prozac. But so they've all kind of, they're all on the same page. They do seem like a team, those two, Tony and Carmella. Like, Carmella knows where all the hidden money is. She opens that Campbell's soup to take Meadow shopping, but Meadow doesn't want to because she's thought it was stupid since she was 8, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you didn't fucking say it was stupid last year, but now that you've got to... but all right.
Yeah.
But so she kind of seems to be together with him. Like, she knows all the shit that he does, but she's still there, and she seems maybe frustrated by it, but that she's seeing it through.
Yes. She's not opting out, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And she likes him as a person. Like, clearly they get along. They have rapport. They have chemistry.
She's there at the MRA place. She's holding his hand till the last second before he goes in. Like, they're having a hard time, but she really does seem to be his wife.
Yes.
That is my... But someone... So the exact opposite of that is his mother, who you get this scene of Uncle Junior driving her to the new, the reorganized birthday party. And Uncle Junior's kind of complaining to her, like, the kids these days, and they're both sort of agreeing that things aren't the way they used to be. And he's starting to push it a little bit further. She's like, I don't want to talk about it. And he's like, well, we got to, because, like, Tony, you know, I don't know if he's capable of running these things. It's getting to the point where, you know, something might have to be done about it. And she doesn't say anything. She keeps quiet as they're driving in this car.
Yeah.
And her brother-in-law has basically said, I might kill your son.
Yeah, yep.
And she accepts that.
Oh, boy. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
It is interesting that they both keep referring back to... It's Johnny, right? John Soprano. Johnny Soprano is Tony's
dad. His
dad. Yeah.
Is it? I think maybe. Something like that.
I think so.
That sounds right to me.
I guess both of them are stuck in a different time, and Tony might be the casualty of that, which is doubly interesting because Tony mentions earlier in the episode, like, his mum never liked his dad.
Right.
Like, she treated him like shit, I guess is the thing that we kind of come to understand. Like, Tony, I believe, yeah, says that she
wore
he was
him
a
down
strong guy,
up.
And yeah, she wore him down, which...
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see why. Fucking
and
hell.
He resents her for it, clearly. Like, that's the one thing when he's talking to Melfi that he's, like, properly opening up about. It's like, my fucking mother is a real piece of shit. Yeah. And she seems like it.
Yep, yes, she does.
She's really...
yeah.
She's really got a streak of cruelty visible about her, which is great acting.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're everything's sort of all wrapped up for that at the party. They all kind of walk off, and the camera pans back over to the empty pool.
Yeah, which, you know, the entire time I was watching this, I just kept thinking that this could have been maybe a short film. You get rid of some of the side plots, but this could be its own encapsulated little story. You know, this vulnerable mob guy opening up about the things that have caused him to become, you know, a panic attack suffering depressed mess,
right?
And coming to terms with it and having a nice little metaphor that sort of wraps the whole thing together. I liked it. I'm surprised that anyone got annoyed at the end of the series where, you know, I mean, like, whatever. But the fact that this pans over to an empty pool at the end of the episode, I think tells you what kind of show this is going to be, is the point.
100%. Because, like, everything's been... All his family is there together. They're all going and eating whatever, the fucking ziti. And the very last thing is, like, yeah, they haven't actually solved anything.
Right.
This pool is empty.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Like, those ducks, they're gone.
They're
the pool
gone.
Is empty.
And just like he very clearly says it throughout the whole episode, but it's like times aren't how they were, and I'm someone who maybe can't exist in the current time. And like there's the RICO Act and all of that. There's external things that are making it happen. But he says himself, like, it can't all be put down to the Justice Department. People are changing. Things are more complicated now. And yeah, it is a relatable thing outside of it being the mob. Like, again, they explicitly say this, but he's a father who has problems with his kids and his wife and his job. Like, he's Homer fucking Simpson.
Yes. Yeah, he is. He's that wisecracking son.
Yeah.
That know-it-all daughter who wants to go skiing. I don't know, yeah. But I think that's why this is a great show and why it continues to be one. But it also has some sick genre stuff, some really good plots, some really interesting other characters that come in later. Fuck, I'm excited to like you said before, you know, I just want to roll through to the next one, but
yeah. This being basically fresh for me too, I'm really excited to watch the rest of it, to get to the point where, like, because there's that, like, one kind of action-y scene where they chase down the guy, and that's a little dodgy looking.
Sure.
You can see the difference between what movies and TV were capable of back then. Yep. I'm excited to see whether or not that aspect of things changes and whether the sort of more traditional mob movie aspects increase. But all of the interpersonal stuff, all of the characters, the acting is fantastic. I'm really excited to watch the rest of this good show. The one note
yes,
that I had down that we didn't get to is that at one point Tony Soprano calls Hannibal Lecter Hannibal Lecture. And again, the way that just that for character building is really good.
Yeah, I echo everything you just said. I also am excited to see, because I reckon from memory, they figure out a lot of stuff tonally by the second episode. Like this, I remember this pilot being particularly sort of like pilot-y. And from memory, it does step up a lot more in the second episode, and I'm just so excited to see that.
It makes sense too, because like this is a pretty risky thing for the time. You know, I guess Sex and the City had been around for a while, and people also say that Sex and the City was kind of kicked off but that is a more traditional episode by episode and more closer to a sitcom.
Yes,
you know,
totally.
Like an existing sort of format of television.
Yes.
Whereas this, like, if you think about crime shows before this,
yeah,
A, they were generally viewed from the perspective of the cop.
Yes.
And
yep.
B, they were that sort of procedural, isolated episode, formulaic kind of thing, and weren't getting to the sort of it was about heroes versus villains,
sure,
rather than
complex or it was solving mysteries, solving crimes. I think Homicide, Life on the Street was one of the early ones where it was like gritty, but yeah, still procedural. I'm trying to figure out when Oz came out.
The Wire is like 2005 or something, right? That's another show that I haven't seen.
I think 02. So it's after this. It's as good, I reckon. I love it. It's a show I should probably rewatch as well. But I yeah.
Maybe one day.
Yeah. In a year or two.
Why are you talking to me?
Yeah, that's good. That's it. That's easy. Oz, why can't I? It's such a vague term. I can't Google it properly. Oz show. Here we go. It's premiered in 97. Okay, so Oz.
Okay.
Oz. Yeah.
Look, Oz in terms first, of like the history of TV and stuff. Again, we were 12 and 10 around this time, so of course we're going to be missing a whole lot of context, but. From today, looking back, that is the impression that you get about the significance of this show.
Yes, totally.
And I'm excited to keep watching it.
All right, well, I guess let's do that in a week's time.
Hopefully people want us to.
I think so. There's, like I said at the start, so this is a show that for a lot of people our age and younger would have fallen, you know, between the cracks of being a relevant show, but hearing that it's a fantastic one. So, I'm sure and a lot of people will be coming along on the journey.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you hear from Are You Talking to Me before it, then you kind of know the format of this. We'll probably do just the one episode a week.
I think so. Yeah, there's no rush. With Aria, we were trying to match up with the final season premiering, but this is a little more leisurely, I think.
Yeah, there's 86 episodes of this show. So if you're keen to watch Sopranos over the next kind of year and a half, that's probably how it'll pan out for us.
Yeah. We got some other ideas for sort of supplementary content if the show sort of kicks off. But all of that in time. We're still on the first episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you've enjoyed this, tell your friends about it. It's a brand new show, so yeah, we need support. Rate and review it on iTunes. Tell your friends about it. Share it around. Talk about it. Post about it. Instagram it. All that shit.
Come have your little Sopranos book club every week with us.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening to episode 1 of Gabagool, and we'll see you next week.
See you later.